stop doing the reading first. So what can I say, Roy?
Well, it's happened to all of us one time or another. I just hope so. I seem to recall a couple of months ago similar comments from people saying, you just wait until August. And so we waited until August. I hope the response in October is, you know, wait for November. But, yeah, I guess, you know, there's nothing I can do otherwise than just kind of sit, wait, and stare at my pan adapter. So I hope the thing opens up wide, not wide enough that I can't find a single kilocycle to call my own, but still, it would be really nice to see a lot more action going on 10 meters than the last few months of talking to guys in Brooklyn and maybe on a good day, Queens.
You know, that's what it is sometimes, is, you know, just spend hours and hours watching the pan adapter and the DX cluster spots until you spot something interesting. And I always got a kick out of doing that. You know, and every so often you get some really spectacular, unexpected contact. I think I told you, guy I worked in the Shanghai area on 40-meter CW, of all places, a couple of months ago. And it was just about sunset here, and I pulled him up on QRZ and saw it was like 3 hours after his sunrise time, and I was like, forget it. That's not a good contact. Somebody's playing games. But I had the LOTW confirm the next day. Like, holy cow, that was a good contact. See, you just don't know what's going to happen sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's an old theory that I keep on talking about, that if contacts were not erratic, if it was a given that you turn on the radio, you dial up 10 meters, and you talk to a bunch of people day in and day out, week in and week out, year in and year out, it kind of takes a little bit of the shine off of the hobby. It's the unpredictability that you just have to be in the right place at the right time for the magic to happen. That's part of the allure of the hobby. I think it was like a cell phone contact. You know, people would not enjoy the experience anywhere as far as you did when you made your contact.
Yeah, I think some bands, particularly notorious for that, 40 meters sunset on a late summer evening, late August evening seems, sometimes in the spring also, but I've experienced it in August also, make some really strange contacts. Years ago, I worked at the station in the Philippines at 7 o'clock, 7 p.m., an hour before sunset on 40 meters. And again, I was pretty sure that I'm like, no, this contact's no good. But I eventually got the card through the borough, as a friend of mine likes to say. Anyway, 10... I had another weird couple of years ago, Norfolk Island on 10 meters, that was 2 or 3 years ago, came through. And again, it was one I was pretty sure that one, like, I didn't get anything on LOTW. I was like, no, conditions weren't that good. That's going to turn out to be a slim or no good. I eventually got the LOTW confirmation on that one. So, you know, strange things happen. The ones you expect to be good, the guy says you're not in the log, or I was never on the air at the time, or whatever.
Yeah, it's very unpredictable. My most surprising contact, I've mentioned it more than a few times, on the technical net, I was finishing up on the 10-meter net at 1 o'clock, and about 5-10 minutes later, Namibia Station throws out its call sign. So there was someone who was talking on the 10-meter net who hung around, and he talked to the guy, and so I turned on the transmitter and I talked to him as well. And I've had chats with him repeatedly for some odd reason. He seems to be the only ham that sits there with a really nice station in Namibia looking for contact. So that was my sort of surprise contact that Sunday morning.
Yeah, I think there's a big station down there operated by the Boy Scouts of, TH-6 and maximum power, legal limit power, that shows up on various bands. I am moving out, selling my second apartment in Brighton Beach near Coney Island, and have a couple of old an old dual band mobile radio, and I may have a couple of HTs there. 1980s stuff kicking around, as well as a couple of portable antennas. If you know anybody in the old Brooklyn club that maybe looking for some old stuff, they can fix and use, they're welcome to shoot me an email, get my email address from the QRZ page, and get in touch with me, or you can just give them my email, whatever. Go ahead.
Okay, just to make sure, do they work or they all need to be repaired?
I can't say with certainty. I think the dual band radio still worked the last time I used it quite a few years ago. I think the problem is the fuse blew in the Astron power supply, and since I wasn't home that much anymore, I just didn't really bother to get it fixed. So I think the power supply, I think I have a 20-amp Astron supply, I think that needs a fuse. The radio probably works, and the HTs, if I still have them there, I'll have to look when I'm there later in the week, probably work. So I can't say with certainty. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll pass it along. If you have the opportunity to email me the model numbers, because usually, if you offer things that don't even include the model number, just this 1980 stuff, but... Yeah, it's more likely to kind of hit a bell with these guys. So if you have any specs on any of them as far as the models that they are, email me and I'll pass it along to the rest of the guys.
Yeah, very good. I'll try to do that when I'm there later in the week. We're going to spend a couple of days there this week packing stuff up, and then probably be there a few more times before we have the movers come sometime in September and take everything away and junk everything we're not taking to our home, to our place in Philadelphia. Go ahead. But yeah, I'll try to get to you later in the week on that, either with just model numbers or with pictures of some of the stuff. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. Like I said, once I get that, I'll figure some way of passing it along. Probably sending an email would be the best method of spreading it out to the widest length, because, if I rely on nets, not what they once were. So you might be able to get, 6-7 people on a net. But my mailing list has, I think, 81 members now. I can just send a mail merge out and just tell people what's available and who to contact.
Okay, we'll do that. And it's not hard to do. I just have to be physically there to do it. 73 for now. Let you go on with the net. WB2BX, so.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, Frank could always get on the swap and shop, too. That's on tomorrow night, you know, after the club net. Might be worth it. I wonder if he has any 220 stuff. I know they were looking for 220 stuff because they set up a brand new 220 repeater at Hofstra. See you tomorrow.
I had an ICOM, I think it was a 3AT at one time. I think I sold or gave that away years ago, but I'll check and let you know, Paul. Go ahead.
Yeah, I heard last week on the club night they were looking for people with all the radios that, you know, that might be on 220 because you can't, or it's difficult to buy a relatively new radio for 220. So, anyway, I heard that last week. But George always does a good job with the swap and shop. We'll talk to you later, Frank, if you want. Over to you, Bert.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Frank, as always. Always a pleasure. And we'll talk again down the line. 73, Frank.
Okay, 73.
Okay, I think that was the fastest 73 I've heard in a while. We have another gentleman on EchoLink, John, N2ZC. I think he's been trying to get in. So we'll kind of let the repeater rest for a couple of seconds and give John an opportunity to hit the echo link.
Hello, Roy, November 2, Zulu Charlie, rather HK, November 2, Zulu Charlie. Thank you for letting me step in.
Sure. Always a pleasure. What's your question for tonight, John?
Yes. As you know, I sent you a couple of emails with some diagrams that seem to be erroneous. Unfortunately, on the net, they said they were collinear antennas. It piqued my interest. I have a book down here, and unfortunately, it's falling apart out of the binds, and the pages are all messed up and everything. But, I was reading about the close to 3 dB gain that gets. But let me just regress for a minute. I seem to remember, and as you said earlier, that sometimes memories are incorrect. And I was reading the ARRL antenna handbook, and I believe that they were giving some sort of praise to a 3.5 length dipole, claiming it gave a similar close to 3 dB gain. So I just would like to hear whatever you would have to say on these that piece of information. It's such a dipole, that's a 3.5 wave is superior to the typical half wave, and is a collinear. Can you make that from a dipole in a horizontal position?
Okay. A collinear antennas usually are identical elements that are stacked up with some strapping so that the phase it stays the same and you don't have any interference. And the usual method that most people see functioning are a lot of these UHF, VHF vertical antennas, because they're stacked separate antenna elements, one on top of the other with some phase correction. So these GP9s, GP6s, even GP3s, as the numbers increase, the length increases because the number of separate antennas that are strapped together. And if you strap different antennas together, you know, three antennas together, you're going to get more signal output coming off of them. That's where the 3 decibel gain sometimes comes. So it's not a total output improvement. What happens is the collinear antennas interact with each other, and the so-called donut that we all keep talking about gets squished down into practically a disc. You know, gets flattened somewhat. So that's how collinears. The illustration that you kept on sending me either was mislabeled or something weird was going on, because that's basically a G5RV antenna. G5RV antennas, depends who you talk to of how they operate. Most people these days say that a G5RV is just a glorified doublet, which is a non-resonant dipole, and with a impedance matching open line wire. So they don't have symmetrical redundant elements that work in phase with each other. It's one radiator. It's the doublet that radiates for the G5RV. It was very popular about 10, 12 years ago. It's kind of gone out of style a little bit, but a lot of people still use G5RVs, and they swear by them.
Okay, in that diagram, the second one I sent you, when I looked at it, I can't look at it now because if I do that, I get knocked off of Echolink. It showed a half, it was a dipole with a half wave on each side. Rather than our typical half wave dipole with a quarter wave on each side, this one had a half wave on each side and then had some sort of a matching element there coming into it in the center feed. So the G5RV, like you said, I remember that being a multi-band antenna, and it wasn't really cut for any one particular frequency, but that one seems to be two half waves, you know, a half wave on one side and a half wave to the other. Do you still consider that to be a G5RV?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times G5RVs, the dipoles were cut for 20 meters of resonance, and the non-resident portions were corrected with the antenna tuner. So, yeah, I don't remember. I think it said something. What was the length of, well, yeah, you can't look it up. I'll look it up. We'll have a little pause for a second, and I'll look it up, because it was a very short dipole. So if that was a half wavelength, I think it's something in the VHF range. But let me try quickly to look it up.
Okay, thank you.
WB2BXO, if I may pop in here a moment. The full-size G5RV, which, if I remember correctly, and Roy, you'll probably know, I think is a little shorter than a full-size resonant 80-meter dipole, and it's supposed to work on 80 through 10 meters, although, as I understand it, very few people actually get it to work properly on all bands. And you are right, Roy, that the collinears, in fact, one of the antennas I have, and I think it's missing a radio, is an old 3 dB gain collinear that I have at the other apartment, a Hustler High Gainer collinear, I think it is. 3 dB's gain at the horizon, And I actually had one at my own location in Canarsie that was a 6 dB gain, a much longer antenna, since, as you said, they're stacked half-wave elements. And the gain isn't magic. The gain is, as you said, a pancake pattern. It's at the horizon, which for VHF operation is usually what you want. So it acts like it's omnidirectional by putting the gain at the horizon and giving you that pancake pattern. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still looking for John's email. The secret is antennas are passive instruments. So when we talk about gain, which sometimes confuses some people, it's not total gain. The amount of output versus the input to an antenna, you always have loss because the laws of thermodynamics. So you put 100 watts of energy into an antenna, you'll never get 100 watts out because it's not 100% efficient. And when we talk about gain, we more talk about directionality, we squeeze more of the energy in a smaller radiation pattern that's more effective, especially with UHF and VHF, where you're trying to hit a line of sight vertical antenna. A squished down pancake that has higher energy densities is going to give you more oomph than having it isotropic like a light bulb and go in all directions.
Yeah, I've heard that analogy before. That is very good. I think if I remember what Dick used to explain, it's kind of like the difference between a light bulb, a bare light bulb radiating in all directions, and a flashlight with a reflector on it, which gives you, in radio terms, 90 dB gain, or 90 dB front to back in one direction. So you can't. You're right, though. That's a good point, because you can't kind of simulate these things usually using light, where you can actually see the electromagnetic energy with your eyes and what direction it's going in. In fact, it's not really an analogy when you think about it, because light is simply a part of the electromagnetic spectrum that we can detect with our eyes. So it actually does. That's why it actually does work more or less the same way. Go ahead.
Yeah. A lot of people, unfortunately, once again, it's a kind of a poor choice for words. I'm sure if someone sat down and thought long and hard enough, they'd come up with something better than gain. Again, because most people, when they think of gain, they think of linear amplifiers and such. Those are active devices. They legitimately do give you gain. Amplifiers give you gain. But, we're just talking about radiation densities, that they're not isotropic like an incandescent light bulb would be. They're squeezed in a particular optimal direction. Yeah, I just pulled it up, and I don't know, I guess I misremembered it. But, yeah, it does say half a wave on both sides. But it's still... I wouldn't still call it a collinear antenna because the two elements are dipoles. They're connected in opposite poles, so they're not collinear with each other. They're opposing each other. So I would still kind of say that it's some kind of weird version of a G5RV. Because you don't necessarily have to have resonance. Sometimes some people cut G5RVs to be resonant for one frequency. But up until about 10 years ago, people had all kinds of ideas how the open line was a kind of a stub and one of the modes. irradiated RF, and that was how it was resonant for one band, and then there was another mode and another mode. Nowadays, I think everyone's grown tired of it being complicated, and they say it's just a doublet with an impedance transforming open line, and then you still have to hook it up to an antenna tuner. Otherwise, you'll get as poor results as any other doublet.
Yeah, from the reading that I was doing on this, and it was just, you know, a brief couple pages in there, yeah, I'm fully aware it doesn't amplify the power. It amplifies the pattern in a direction similar to a beam. You know, if you say you get the 3 dB gain out of the beam, it's because it's you're directing it in one direction. So, yeah, I fully got. But from what I was reading, the whole science behind this collinear was a constructive interference where the theory with the regular dipoles, it races to one end and then it shoots back and then it constructively interferes if it's tuned right and you get the antenna to radiate. And so this was... that you would get that constructive interference, I think, twice, and it would give you this gain. It seems to be, like any vertical antenna could be made into a horizontal, unless I was misunderstanding it or the book was wrong. It seemed to be that they were giving instructions on how to make one of these, you know, with a dipole, which sounds reasonable that... they're connected end to end, and then they're going to interfere constructively. Again, just briefly, did you ever hear or remember reading anything or coming across or having announced that a 3 half wave gives you a better gain, you know, in a particular direction than a regular half wave dipole?
Well, like we mentioned earlier, it's not that there's a power increase. It's just that you're distorting the radiation pattern. For a classical half-wave center-fed dipole in space, the radiation pattern is a donut shape. And if you do anything to distort that, you distort the radiation pattern, sometimes to the benefit and sometimes to making it poorer. If you extend a half quarter wave dipole to, you know, 3/4 of a wave, it'll still be resonant, but the radiation pattern will get distorted. You'll start to develop nodes and peaks in odd places. If those peaks kind of suit your purposes and point in the direction of who you want to talk to, then great. If unfortunately it produces nodes in that direction, then you're in trouble. Now, it is not uncommon to have collinear dipole antennas. As far as I'm aware, the Glen Oaks repeater uses a series of dipoles that are extended down a mast. And they're pointed in different directions, but they're basically a collinear series. I think it's 4 dipoles on the transmitting antenna of the Glen Oaks repeater.
Okay, really define this collinear. If you took a dipole and connected it end-to-end with another dipole, now forgetting about whether it works or not, is that what you would consider collinear? That that's what it seems to be to me. Like when I'm seeing these vertical UHF collinear antennas, they seem to be connected end-to-end, and between them is some sort of trap which... is made to give this phase difference again, so that they will interact and give constructive interference. So just to define that term collinear, end to end, would you agree with that or not?
Yes, I would completely agree with you. They have a common feed point, except for the bit of passive equipment that is operating the phase adjustment, so that they're all coordinating output spatially, so they'll all add up. One of the many reasons, though, that primarily you don't see collinear in horizontal designs is because you're basically forming that pancake that goes straight up into nowhere land. So it's much more useful to kind of narrow the donut into a disc when you're operating it vertically. Then the cross section is just cutting across other vertical antennas. It's a much more effective way of arranging the radiation pattern. So that's why most collinears are oriented vertically. The array of four loop dipoles on Glen Oaks is phased together, and so they manifest the same type of concentration, plus the fact that since you can kind of rotate each of the elements to a different direction, you can get a little degree of omnidirectionality as well. So yeah, that's what you described as a collinear design, which I wouldn't say that the illustration you showed me, because again, it's just showing the two dipoles and they're arranged oppositely. The current is going down. One current is going down one leg, and the other current is going down the other leg. So that's not what you just described correctly as the collinear antennas.
Okay, all right. I'm trying to visualize that diagram. I have a pretty good memory of it. And would it then, in order to be a collinear, are you saying that it would have to be end-fed? The two dipoles, two halfway dipoles connected end-to-end and then end-fed? Am I understanding you correctly on that?
Well, they have to have common feed points, the input in the ground. Whereas, because this is actually a doublet, you have one transmission line, open wire going to the left element of the doublet, and to the other wire going to the right element of the doublet. You don't have two identically oriented, phase-shifted, driven elements. You have a half of a dipole on one side and the other half of the dipole on the other side, and so that's one radiating structure as opposed to separate ones that have a common antenna feed.
I kind of understand what you're saying. I can't visualize it, so I'm going to have to regurgitate it a little. All right, thank you. And to just touch upon one more thing that you said, with a dipole, I'm familiar with the wave pattern with it, and at the end of the dipole, in the wave pattern we see it. Supposedly, it's very little or no radiation, and I thought from what I was reading that this just squeezes that out all together and kind of like fattens it in that direction. So I thought that the collinear, if it was horizontal, would radiate in the same direction. I understand what you're saying about that up and down as opposed to horizontal, but doesn't a standard dipole radiates up and down side to side and has a null on either end of it, Now, I thought the collinear, if it was a horizontal dipole, would have that same pattern. Any radiation that was present in the nulls, however little, was then eliminated, and more directional, let's say, in that the omnidirectional around the horizontal. I don't know if I'm making myself clear. Kind of hard without a diagram, but I'm hoping you're following me.
Okay. You would just, theoretically, you would get, if you rotated it horizontally, you'd get a disc that would kind of cut a very thin a radiation pattern, you know, across, you know, everything. You know, a significant portion would go straight up and get lost because it wouldn't probably reflect back down because it's too high an angle, so you have a near vertical incident sky wave type of thing going on there. And yeah, it would do that, but you don't get quite the same benefit if you are trying to do DX and you're operating as a kind of a very very high directionality that a lot of it goes down into the ground and up into the sky. So it's kind of the Yagi from hell, in which the Yagi at least gives you a kind of directionality that, you know, you point it someplace and it goes, where this is going to give you a plane. And it's a plane at 90 degrees from the surface of the Earth. So it's probably the least optimized position for something like that. There's a lot of places that you miss reaching antennas by doing it that way. But, I mean, it would have the same effect spatially. The problem also is we always kind of think of that donut, which is in free space. And I don't know about you, but I've never been able to put up a dipole in free space. It's usually X number of feet off of the ground. So the radiation pattern for the center-fed dipoles that most of us use tend to be more of a kind of a half of a donut, which is fine. It gets the job done. But it's not that wonderful donut shape that you see in textbooks, because if you look at the little teeny tiny print, it says in free space. So if you're ever launching a satellite or something and you want to put a dipole on it, that's where the donut is, in free space.
Okay, I'm gonna do some more reading on this and you know, get back to you, be able to speak hopefully a little more precise on it. And you know, bringing up what you said in free space, I always wondered and wanted to see. I'm sure almost every ham has wondered about this one, and I want to see if you have any input on it. You know, the recommendations are, and I think it's a quarter wave. You're supposed to have a dipole or a beam or, you know, a quarter wave above ground. And I may be wrong. Maybe it's a half wave, but I think it's a quarter wave. But that aside, if you put the a half wave or a quarter wave above ground, now, if you put that antenna on top of a building, does that half wave or quarter wave now become the top of that building, or is it? I think you know what I'm trying to say. If you put it on top of a 10-foot mast on a 20-story building, have you achieved that quarter wave? I mean, obviously from the street level up, yeah. But does that building itself now create a new bottom for that specific need to have?
Yeah, it's a half wavelength that gives you the optimum radiation pattern you sometimes see in the literature, and it's counted on earth ground, not a building. So if you put it up on a building that's a half wavelength long, then effectively you're operating reasonably well. You're not going to get coupling to earth ground at the top of a roof of a building. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, not only did it answer it, it was the answer that all hams wanted to hear. All right, Roy, yeah, I'll do some more reading on this. Thanks again for your time, as always, and thanks for, making the pause there so I could jump in. So much appreciated. AC2GS, HK, November 2, Zulu Charlie, and back to the net.
You're welcome, John. As always, I appreciate your participation on the TechNet, and I look forward to more interesting questions. I scribbled down K1 EFW's call sign. When I get a chance, I'll Google it. I'll try and kind of backtrack to the source of why the guy is calling this a collinear antenna when it really doesn't strike me as one, but maybe he knows something that I don't know, so I'll take a look. I'll go hunting for K1EFW's. Hopefully he has a website, or someone took his material and published it on our website. So we'll see. So thank you again, as always, John.
No, thank you, Roy, and thank you for the net again for giving me that voice to jump in.
My pleasure. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Limark Technical Net, and we're still open for business. We got some time left. If anyone has any questions or topics that they would like to throw around, feel free. Hit that push to talk and give me your call sign and your first name.
Yeah, Roy, I have a comment. UB2BXL wants to...
Sure, Frank.
Yeah, it does sound like an opinion, but you look it up, you'll find out whether I'm right. It does sound like what K1EFW is trying to do is use a horizontal collinear, perhaps, as an NVIS. And a near vertical incident sky wave sending all the energy upward in what Dick would have called a cloud warmer. But, the cloud warmers do have legitimate applications for NVIS, the guys who need to speak clothing for emergency comms and military applications, so to speak. Opposite of what I like doing. Go ahead, Roy.
Well, I mean, ultimately, I guess it really depends on the elevation, which I guess you can discern. He has in his diagram, he has open wire, a one-quarter of a wavelength long, and then he has it shorted at the bottom, and but then connected to a coax cable, so that it's probably being used for some impedance transforming transmission line. And he has 50 feet of coax. So I'm let's see, is it 50 feet? I'm trying to make out it doesn't climb to, let's see, coax. He says 50 ohm coax. So he doesn't really say how long the 50 ohm transmission line is. He just has the open line being a quarter of a wavelength. So I guess theoretically it could be a near vertical incident sky wave, but then again, you know, I don't see any particular added benefit in making a doublet as opposed to a resonant antenna, so maybe there's something else going on. I don't know. I don't see anything to indicate that it was meant to be a near vertical incident sky wave. Supposedly, from John, it was listed, not in the illustration that he sent me, but it was listed elsewhere as a collinear antenna. So I don't know. I'm a little confused. You know, I mean, I guess vaguely, well, you can't even say it's a collinear pair of NSETs, because they're not connected to the same antenna feed. They're connected to the opposite ends of the antenna feed. So I have to ponder this more, why it's simply not a non-resonant doublet. Oh, you know, what makes it anything close to an to a collinear?
What you're describing sounds like a G5RV Junior design, because I think that's what I actually may still have one somewhere, where they have a, as you said, open wire line going to 50 feet of coax. And of course, once you go to coax, the length is not supposed to matter. Only the length of the open wire is supposed to matter, if I remember correctly. But I'm far from an expert on this. Go ahead.
WN2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, that's the antenna I have, the G5RV Junior, which is very good, you know. The regular long one has this real long lateral line, and this is shorter. I don't have the dimensions, but I would imagine it's probably maybe 10 feet for lateral line, you know. So you come up with coax on the lateral line, and then you go to the insulator, and I use it exclusively for 40 meters. It works very, very good. Back you, Ron.
Yeah, I mean, except the lengths are a little bit wonky, but the design looks identical to a G5RV. I've seen many of them in illustrations. And I'm kind of thankful that everyone kind of, most people that I've read recently have settled on a far simpler explanation of how it operates, because I've read some really strange interpretations of how it's multimodal and different portions of the elements are driven using different frequencies. You know, the description of it as just being a non-resonant doublet, it makes life a lot easier. So, again, I can't kind of perceive this being called collinear, because I don't see a collinear component. It's not a series of elements that are parallel connected. It's very much serially connected. So I don't quite know why someone would interpret it collinear. But again, I'll kind of hunt down the designer, if he's on the internet, and see if I can figure it out and report next week if I find anything. Now, by the way, I hope I'm not blocking you, Frank. The length of a coax is not important as long as your antenna is resonant and possesses a 50-ohm impedance at the antenna feed line. If it doesn't, then the length of the coaxial cable will act as an impedance transforming device itself and introduce some problems that might require RF chokes and such things. So the length of a shielded coax cable in a resonant 50-ohm antenna feed antenna is indifferent. It could be one foot, it could be 1,000 feet, you know, except for the attenuation losses. But if it's a mismatch, then the distance of the transmission line affects the rotation of the impedance mismatch.
That would make sense, given the problems I had with my coax fed antennas at my old station in Canarsie, where my SWRs were high and nothing were well matched, just because it was difficult to maintain, to properly maintain the antennas in an apartment situation. So that makes sense to me, just based on my practical experience, I guess.
AC2GS. Yeah, I mean, one of the magic tricks I used to play around with was I had I think it was the days of my fan dipole for 10 meters, and it wasn't well adjusted for 10 meters, so I had to kind of deal with it through my antenna tuner.
What happened here?
Do you hear me? It looks like I'm coming across. Do you hear me, Frank?
I heard both of you. I think Frank must have had a problem. So you're coming through, no problem, Mark.
Okay. I mean, you know, sometimes there's glitches, but I'm looking at myself through IRLP, through Allstar, and through Echolink. And the signal seems to be going through Echolink. So I'm a little confused. Maybe Frank is having a little bit of a problem on his end.
Yeah, I'm back. I wasn't sure if the problem was on your end or mine. So this guy decided the best thing to do was to sign out in case I was hanging up the system and came back on. Anyway, yeah, so it's possible it was at my end, WB2BXO.
Okay, I was saying that in the old days I had a fan dipole, and it wouldn't tune. You know, my antenna tuner just couldn't make it. So I put a 3-foot jumper between the transmission line coming from the fan dipole and the antenna tuner. That was enough to rotate the impedance back into a place where the antenna tuner's L network could tune it back to 50 ohms. So it was a nice little experiment that proved the concept.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wish I'd realized that with my old apartment antennas, I might have been able to get some of them to work a little better. Yeah, because, I mean, the conventional wisdom, as you say, is that coax lengths don't matter. But you're probably right. They only don't matter if you actually have a perfect 50-ohm match. And most of us, when we're doing compromise antennas in apartments, do not have a perfectly resonant 50-ohm match. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like supposedly there was an entry on Facebook for relationships that you could select that said it's complicated. So, yeah, ultimately, if you kind of dive in, there's these unfortunate complications. You know, in the old days, Dick used to regularly lament the fact that people who sold antenna tuners did not offer Smith charts that showed you the impedance regions that were matchable and those that weren't, which I think is doable, but I think a lot of people are frightened by Smith charts, and companies that make antenna tuners probably don't want any more work. So I've never, ever, ever, ever seen an antenna tuner that had a Smith chart available to check what range of impedances they could handle and what they couldn't. They just sort of make stuff up, and they say, it handles 10 to 1, which is not an accurate thing to say. It handles some 10 to 1s, but not all.
And, of course, just because the antenna handles 10 to 1 does not mean it's going to radiate. Guys love to tune anything where the 10 to 1 SWR and then wonder why they don't actually make any contacts. Good.
AC2GS. The problem is that the people are most interested in things you could most easily measure. So you can measure power output. You may be able to measure reflected power if you know for a fact that your line isn't attenuating it and distorting the figures. You know, with a VNA, you could even figure out what the impedance is. You can't figure out the efficiency. There is no simple way short of getting the armed forces to let you use their facilities to be able to map out in three-dimensional space the energy output and then integrate it into a full efficiency calculation for antenna design. And that's why you will never, ever, 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 never, ever, ever, never see efficiency as a factor in an antenna. They'll give you a lot of other specs if they're allowed to, but not efficiency. And ultimately, that's probably the most important. Radiation pattern and efficiency are the two most important aspects of an antenna. And it's very difficult to discern either of them, other than theoretically, which lots of luck with that.
Yeah, right. I remember seeing somewhere a couple of months ago that the Air Force is actually experimenting with using flex radios for HF comms from some of its long-range aircraft. Anyway, I'm going to be on the side for a little while. I'll try to come back in time for Paul's section of the next WB2BXO.
Okay, very good, Frank. Thank you again. Yeah, Flex Radio has a bunch of connections with the Defense Department. I'm sure they have big contracts with the NSA and with the military and such. So that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. I wish they could kind of slide some of those profits over to the amateur radio sector and, you know, hire a damn software engineer. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that. So thanks again, Frank. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limewalk Technical Net, and we still have a little time left if anyone would like to take advantage of it. Questions, comments, any kind of topic, just hit that push to talk and ID yourself, give us your call sign and your first name.
KQ2RY, David, good evening.
Good evening, David. David and I chatted this morning on the Kings County Radio Club 10-meter net, and now we're chatting here. We're all over the place, David. What can I do for you tonight?
I don't know. I just worked a station on 20 meters. His call sign was Tango Oscar 8 Foxtrot Papa.
Okay, where is that?
It's an island off of Newfoundland, I think. Said that it's Saint-Pierre and Miquelon. I never heard of it before, so I looked on the map. And it's about 982 air miles from New York City.
Ah, congratulations. A new place. It's seldom that hams have the opportunity to work a new country, if you will.
QSL. I tried to look for them. He didn't talk for very long. It was a very short QSO compared to all the other ones, and there was such a pile up for him that I had to transmit 5 kilohertz up.
Okay, that's been known to be required for some congested contacts.
Yeah, it was crazy. I thought, well, I'll try just one more time. Finally got through.
Yeah, very good. I mean, 20 meters I haven't heard anyone really complain anything special about 20 meters. It's, you know, sunspot minimum. You could usually get through at the right time of day on 20 meters. You don't need a maximum like you'd need for 10 or 6 or such. So, you know, if not 20, then 40 is awake. So there's always a band to work if you have the proper equipment. So I'm glad you're getting some use on 20 meters and contacting new stations. Is he going to send you a QSL card or Am I talking too much into the distant past?
Well, first of all, I'd be happy with a confirmation, either LOTW or QRZ logbook. And it was kind of funny listening to some of the people that were calling this station. There's some very exotic DX calling him.
Well, I guess exotic likes exotic, so that's why that happened, perhaps.
Well, I realize